then at a great distance, as if it came out of memories of the shower, some sunlit early morning, when the day called and doors were opening, he heard Sam's voice speaking. "Wake up, Mr. Frodo! Wake up!" had the voice added. "Your breakfast is ready." He would hardly have been surprised. Certainly Sam was urgent. "Wake up, Mr. Frodo! They're gone," he said. There was a dull clang. The gates of Minas Morgul had closed. The last rank of spears had vanished down the road. The tower still grinned across the valley, but the light was fading in it. The whole city was falling back into a dark, brooding shade and silence. Yet still it was filled with watchfulness. "Wake up, Mr. Frodo! They're gone! And we'd better go, too. There's something still alive in that place, something with eyes or a seeing mind, if you take me. And the longer we stay in one spot, the sooner it will get on to us. Come on, Mr. Frodo!" Frodo raised his head and then stood up. Despair had not left him, but the weakness had passed. He even smiled grimly, feeling now as clearly as a moment before he had felt the opposite, that what he had to do, if he could, and that whether Faramir or Aragorn or Elrond or Galadriel or Gandalf or anyone else ever knew about it, was beside the purpose. He took his staff in one hand and the phial in his other. When he saw that the clear light was already welling through his fingers, he thrust it into his bosom and held it against his heart. Then, turning from the city of Morgul, now no more than a grey glimmer across a dark gulf, he prepared to take the upward road. Gollum, it seemed, had crawled off along the ledge into the darkness beyond, when the gates of Minas Morgul opened, leaving the hobbits where they lay. He now came creeping back, his teeth chattering and his fingers snapping. "Foolish, silly," he hissed. "Make haste. They mustn't think danger has passed. It hasn't. Make haste." They didn't answer, but they followed him on to the climbing ledge. It was little to the liking of either of them, not even after facing so many other perils, but it didn't last long. Soon the path reached a rounded angle where the mountainside swelled out again, and there it suddenly entered a narrow opening in the rock. They'd come to the first stair that Gollum had spoken of. The darkness was almost complete, and they could see nothing much beyond their hand's stretch. But Gollum's eyes shone pale, several feet above, as he turned back towards them.
"Careful," he whispered. "Steps. Lots of steps. Must be careful."
Care was certainly needed. Frodo and Sam at first felt easier, having now a wall on either side, but the stairway was almost as steep as a ladder, and as they climbed up and up, they became more and more aware of the long black fall behind them. And the steps were narrow, spaced unevenly, and often treacherous. They were worn and smooth at the edges, and some were broken, and some cracked as foot was set upon them. The hobbits struggled on, until at last they were clinging with desperate fingers to the steps ahead, and forcing their aching knees to bend and straighten. And ever as the stair cut its way deeper into the sheer mountain, the rocky walls rose higher and higher above their heads. At length, just as they felt that they could endure no more, they saw Gollum's eyes peering down at them again.
"We're up," he whispered. "First stairs passed. Clever hobbits to climb so high. Very clever hobbits. Just a few more little steps, and that's all. Yes."
Dizzy and very tired, Sam, and Frodo following him, crawled up the last step and sat down rubbing their legs and knees. They were in a deep, dark passage that seemed still to go up before them, though at a gentler slope and without steps. Gollum did not let them rest long.
"There's another stair still," he said. "Much longer stair. Rest when we get to the top of next stair, not yet."
Sam groaned.
"Longer, did you say?" he asked.
"Yes, yes, longer," said Gollum. "But not so difficult. Hobbits have climbed the straight stair. Next comes the winding stair.
And what after that? Said Sam.
We shall see,
said Gollum softly.
Oh, yes, we shall see.
I thought you said there was a tunnel, said Sam. Isn't there a tunnel or something to go through?
Oh, yes, there's a tunnel, said Gollum. But hobbits can rest before they try that. If they get through that, they'll be nearly at the top. Very nearly, if they get through. Oh, yes.
Frodo shivered. The climb had made him sweat, but now he felt cold and clammy, and there was a chill draught in the dark passage, blowing down from the invisible heights above. He got up and shook himself. Well, let's go on, he said. This is no place to sit in. The passage seemed to go on for miles, and always the chill air flowed over them, rising as they went on to a bitter wind. The mountains seemed to be trying with their deadly breath to daunt them, to turn them back from the secrets of the high places, or to blow them away into the darkness behind. They only knew that they had come to the end, when suddenly they felt no wall at their right hand. They could see very little. Great black shapeless masses and deep grey shadows loomed above them and about them, but now and again a dull red light flickered up under the lowering clouds, and for a moment they were aware of tall peaks in front and on either side, like pillars holding up a vast, sagging roof. They seemed to have climbed up many hundreds of feet, onto a wide shelf. A cliff was on their left, and a chasm on their right. Gollum led the way close under the cliff. For the present they were no longer climbing, but the ground was now more broken and dangerous in the dark, and there were blocks and lumps of fallen stone in the way. Their going was slow and cautious. How many hours had passed since they had entered the Morgul Vale, neither Sam nor Frodo could any longer guess. The night seemed endless. At length they were once more aware of a wall looming up, and once more a stairway opened before them. Again they halted, and again they began to climb. It was a long and weary ascent, but this stairway did not delve into the mountainside. Here the huge cliff face sloped backwards, and the path, like a snake, wound to and fro across it. At one point it crawled sideways, right to the edge of the dark chasm, and Frodo, glancing down, saw below him, as a vast deep pit, the great ravine at the head of the Morgul Valley. Down in its depths glimmered like a glow-worm thread the wraith road from the dead city to the nameless pass. He turned hastily away. Still on and up the stairway bent and crawled, until at last, with a final flight, short and straight, it climbed out again onto another level. The path had veered away from the main pass in the great ravine, and it now followed its own perilous course at the bottom of a lesser cleft, among the higher regions of the Ephelduath. Dimly the hobbits could discern tall piers and jagged pinnacles of stone on either side, between which were great crevices and fissures blacker than the night, where forgotten winters had gnawed and carved the sunless stone. And now the red light in the sky seemed stronger, though they could not tell whether a dreadful morning were indeed coming to this place of shadow, or whether they saw only the flame of some great violence of Sauron in the torment of Gorgoroth beyond. Still far ahead, and still high above, Frodo, looking up, saw, as he guessed, the very crown of this bitter road. Against the sullen redness of the eastern sky, a cleft was outlined in the topmost ridge, narrow, deep cloven between two black shoulders, and on either shoulder was a horn of stone. He paused and looked more attentively. The horn upon the left was tall and slender, and in it burned a red light, or else the red light in the land beyond was shining through a hole. He saw now. It was a black tower poised above the outer pass. He touched Sam's arm and pointed.
"I don't like the look of that," said Sam. "So this secret way of yours is guarded after all," he growled, turning to Gollum. "As you knew all along, I suppose."
"Always a watched, yes," said Gollum. Of course they are. But hobbits must try some way. This may be least watched. Perhaps they've all gone away to big battle, perhaps.
Perhaps, grunted Sam. Well, it seems a long way off and a long way up before we get there, and there's still a tunnel. Well, I think you ought to rest now, Mr. Frodo. I don't know what time of day or night it is, but we've kept going for hours and hours.
Yes, we must rest, said Frodo. Let us find some corner out of the wind and gather our strength for the last lap.
For so he felt it to be. The terrors of the land beyond and the deed to be done there seemed remote, too far off yet to trouble him. All his mind was bent on getting through or over this impenetrable wall and guard. If once he could do that impossible thing, then somehow the errand would be accomplished, or so it seemed to him in that dark hour of weariness, still labouring in the stony shadows above Kirithungol. In a dark crevice between two great piers of rock they sat down, Frodo and Sam a little way within, and Gollum crouched upon the ground near the opening. There the hobbits took what they expected would be their last meal before they went down into the nameless land, maybe the last meal they would ever eat together. Some of the food of Gondor they ate, and wafers of the waybread of the elves, and they drank a little. But of their water they were sparing, and took only enough to moisten their dry mouths.
"I wonder when we'll find water again," said Sam.
"But I suppose even over there they drink. Orcs drink, don't they?"
"Yes, they drink," said Frodo. "But don't let us speak of that. Such drink is not for us."
"Then all the more need to fill our bottles," said Sam. "But there isn't any water up here. Not a sound or a trickle have I heard. And anyway, Faramir said we were not to drink any water in Morgul."
"No water flowing out of Imlad Morgul," were his words, said Frodo. "We're not in that valley now, and if we came out on a spring it would be flowing into it and not out of it."
"I wouldn't trust it," said Sam. "Not till I was dying of thirst. There's a wicked feeling about this place," he sniffed. "And a smell, I fancy.
Do you notice it? A queer kind of smell. Stuffy. I don't like it."
"I don't like anything here at all," said Frodo. "Step or stone, breath or bone, earth, air and water all seem accursed. But so our path is laid."
"Yes, that's so," said Sam. "And we shouldn't be here at all if we'd known more about it before we started. But I suppose it's often that way. The brave things and the old tales and songs, Mr. Frodo. Adventures, as I used to call them. I used to think that they were things the wonderful folk of the stories went out and looked for because they wanted them, because they were exciting and life was a bit dull, a kind of sport, as you might say. But that's not the way of it with the tales that really mattered, or the ones that stay in the mind. Folk seem to have been just landed in them, usually. Their paths were laid that way, as you put it. But I expect they had lots of chances, like us, of turning back. Only they didn't. And if they had, we shouldn't know, because they'd have been forgotten. We hear about those as just went on, and not all to a good end, mind you. At least not to what folk inside a story, and not outside it, call a good end. You know, coming home and finding things all right, though not quite the same, like old Mr. Bilbo. But those aren't always the best tales to hear, though they may be the best tales to get landed in. I wonder what sort of a tale we've fallen into.
I wonder, said Frodo, but I don't know. And that's the way of a real tale.
Take anyone that you're fond of. You may know or guess what kind of a tale it is, happy ending or sad ending, but the people in it don't know. And you don't want them to.
No, sir, of course not.
Baron now. He never thought he was going to get that Silmaril from the Iron Crown in Thangorodrim, and yet he did, and that was a worse place and a blacker danger than ours. But that's a long tale, of course, and goes on past the happiness and into grief and beyond it. And the Silmaril went on, and came to Iarendil. And why, sir,
I never thought of that before. We've got, you've got, some of the light of it in that star glass that the lady gave you. Why, to think of it, we're in the same tale still. It's going on. Don't the great tales never end?
No, they never end as tales, said Frodo. But the people in them come and go when their part's ended. Our part will end later, or sooner.
And then we can have some rest and some sleep, said Sam.
He laughed grimly. And I mean just that, Mr. Frodo. I mean plain ordinary rest and sleep, and waking up to a morning's work in the garden. I'm afraid that's all I'm hoping for all the time. All the big important plans are not for my sort.
Still,
I wonder if we shall ever be put into songs or tales. We're in one, of course. But I mean, put into words, you know. Told by the fireside. Or read out of a great big book with red and black letters, years and years afterwards. And people will say, let's hear about Frodo and the Ring. And they'll say, yes, that's one of my favourite stories. Frodo was very brave, wasn't he, Dad?
Yes, my boy, the famousest of the hobbits, and that's saying a lot.
It's saying a lot too much, said Frodo, and he laughed, a long, clear laugh from his heart. Such a sound had not been heard in those places since Sauron came to Middle-earth. To Sam, suddenly, it seemed as if all the stones were listening and the tall rocks leaning over them. But Frodo did not heed them. He laughed again.
"Why, Sam," he said, "to hear you somehow makes me as merry as if the story was already written. But you left out one of the chief characters, Samwise the Stout-hearted.
I want to hear more about Sam, Dad. Why didn't they put in more of his talk, Dad? That's what I like. It makes me laugh. And Frodo wouldn't have got far without Sam, would he, Dad?"
"Now, Mr. Frodo," said Sam, "you shouldn't make fun. I was serious."
"So was I," said Frodo, "and so I am. We're going on a bit too fast. You and I, Sam, are still stuck in the worst places of the story, and it is all too likely that some will say at this point, 'Shut the book now, Dad. We don't want to read any more.'"
"Maybe," said Sam, "but I wouldn't be one to say that. Things done and over and made into part of the great tales are different. Why, even Gollum might be good in a tale. Better than he used to have by you, anyway. And he used to like tales himself once, by his own account. I wonder if he thinks he's the hero or the villain."
"Gollum," he called, "would you like to be the hero? Now where has he got to again?"
There was no sign of him at the mouth of their shelter, nor in the shadows near. He had refused their food, though he had, as usual, accepted a mouthful of water, and then he had seemed to curl up for a sleep. They'd supposed that one, at any rate, of his objects in his long absence the day before had been to hunt for food to his own liking, and now he had evidently slipped off again while they talked. But what for this time?
"I don't like his sneaking off without saying," said Sam. "And least of all now. He can't be looking for food up here, not unless there's some kind of rock he fancies. Why, there isn't even a bit of moss."
"It's no good worrying about him now," said Frodo. "We couldn't have got so far, not even within sight of the pass, without him, and so we'll have to put up with his ways. If he's false, he's false."
"All the same, I'd rather have him under my eye," said Sam. "All the more so if he's false. Do you remember he never would say if this pass was guarded or no? And now we see a tower there, and it may be deserted, and it may not. Do you think he's gone to fetch them orcs, or whatever they are?"
"No, I don't think so," answered Frodo. "Even if he's up to some wickedness, and I suppose that's not unlikely, I don't think it's that. Not to fetch orcs, or any servant of the enemy. Why wait till now, and go through all the labour of the climb, and come so near the land he fears? He could probably have betrayed us to orcs many times since we met him. No, if it's anything, it will be some little private trick of his own that he thinks is quite secret."
"Well, I suppose you're right, Mr. Frodo," said Sam.
"Not that it comforts me mightily. I don't make no mistake.
I don't doubt he'd hand me over to Orcs as gladly as kiss his hand. But I was forgetting. His precious. No, I suppose the whole time it's been the precious for poor Smeagol. That's the one idea in all his little schemes, if he has any. But our bringing us up here will help him in that, as more than I can guess. Very likely he can't guess himself, said Frodo. And I don't think he's got just one plain scheme in his muddled head. I think he really is in part trying to save the precious from the enemy as long as he can. For that would be the last disaster for himself, too, if the enemy got it. And in the other part, perhaps, he's just biding his time and waiting on chance. Yes, Slinker and Stinker, as I've said before, said Sam. But the nearer they get to the enemy's land, the more like Stinker Slinker will get. Mark my words, if ever we get to the pass, he won't let us really take the precious thing over the border without making some kind of trouble. We haven't got there yet, said Frodo. No, but we'd better keep our eyes skinned till we do. If we're caught napping, Stinker will come out on top pretty quick. Not but what it would be safe for us to have a wink now, Master. Safe, if you lay close to me. I'd be dearly glad to see you have a sleep. I'd keep watch over you, and anyway, if you lay near, with my arm round you, no one could come pawing you without your Sam knowing it. Sleep, said Frodo, and sighed, as if out of a desert he had seen a mirage of cool green. Yes, even here I could sleep. Sleep then, Master. Lay your head in my lap.